to Game Over, the premier video game show. Happened to be hosted in this case by two brothers and no one else. Only on Mondays from 5 to 5:30 on UMFM and UMFM.com. Or in this case...
From 5 to 6.
From 5 to 6, because we have generously had the half hour donated to us by the TV Talkers people. TV Talkers, sponsored by scheduling difficulties. So we're here for the full hour. If you tried to get rid of us after half an hour, we're not doing it. We're not leaving.
I hope you didn't have anything pressing at 5:30 to do.
Yes, yeah, you be, because yeah, you better be sticking by the radio now that you know that your favorite radio show is doing double duty this week.
We may actually get to finish a thought.
We might actually get to finish a thought. Not a game, because I don't, it's been a while since I finished a game, but we might actually get to finish a thought. That's right. But I am your host, Simon Pazdor, and my faithful squad mate, Adam Pazdor, and that's it. There's nobody else here today, just the two of us. Well, I mean, there are other people, like in university, but there's nobody in the station with us in this room right now. Is that...
Yeah, that's accurate.
Good, we got it.
There's someone else in the station, but there's nobody
else.
There
are other people in the station, that's right. So I kept having to narrow it down in order to be accurate. Luckily, we will not lack stuff to talk about. So I made some Black Friday purchases. Was Black Friday? Oh, no, that was over 2 weeks ago. No, that was not this past Friday.
Not the past Friday, but the one before.
So I made some fall purchases that I don't know if I've talked about yet. You have been playing a lot of Spyro.
I have.
I've been kind of waffling around between like 17 different games trying to play a little bit of them. But meanwhile, with two major, releases this year, the internet is melting under the combined weight of two things that are going on. And tomorrow is the Video Game Awards, which we talked a little bit about last week. But as soon as we dug even a little bit into the Video Game Awards, we realized we need way more time to discuss these. And luckily now, that time has been given to us.
Yes.
So, to start off, why don't you catch us up with your current Spyroing experience? I haven't played a lick of Spyro since the last time we talked about it.
Well, I have, so I've now, because the game that you get, the Reignited Trilogy, comes with all three.
All three of the originals.
Yes. I have played through the first Spyro game, and it is, as we say in my marking classes, done. It is, I have every achievement, I have every piece of treasure, I have every in-game skill point, which are basically their achievements. Because they don't actually give you anything except unlock a gallery. There is nothing left to do Spyro 1. Yes.
Platinumed it, so to speak.
Yes, I platinumed it. Spyro 1 is totally and completely finished. And I gotta say, it was a lot better than I thought. Because when I knew the trilogy was coming out, in my head I was like, oh, I can't wait to do Ripto's Rage again, because I love that game, and Year of the Dragon was amazing, but I have to get through the first one first. Like, I thought it was going to be a slog, but no, I had a great time. Maybe it was because, like, it looks a lot prettier now, so I wasn't, like, feeling like I was downgrading like I did last time I played it. And the quality of life improvements they carried over from the other two, like Sparks pointing out where treasure is and him actually picking up treasure rather than you having to do it manually.
So, by the way, just for the people out there who might be unbelievably lost right now, if you're not like over the age of 20 and have played these games like we have, Spyro the Dragon is a platformer game where you play a baby dragon named Spyro.
Yes.
No, he was this before he was a Skylander, is what I want to like grab and shake them by the throat. This is where it came from, and then he sort of mutated into a Skylander, which I don't want to throw shade at Skylander, even though I just did. But I'm kind of a Spyro purist, and I don't like the redesign they did. I don't like the new voice actor they had when he moved to like the other things. I hold these. I don't think that I usually look at stuff with nostalgia goggles. Like Red and Blue aren't my favorite Pokemon games.
No, not
but
at all.
These three were like one of the few things where I'm like, I'm a purist. I'm like, this is
As far as I'm concerned, these are the only
This is the source
Spyro
material.
Games.
And your companion in these games is a dragonfly named Sparks.
With an X.
Yes. Who changes color to indicate your health.
Yeah. From gold to blue to green and then gone. And then if you take a hit while he's gone, you die.
Yeah, you're done.
So that was, that's great. Yes, that about catches it up. They're mostly platforming games. I mean, there's a little bit of combat, but really it's a puzzle platformer sort of thing.
Yeah.
And almost uniquely, like it's, and again, so Crash Bandicoot was sort of a thing, but that was, there was a little more sort of combat there. And the same thing with Ratchet and Clank, like that was more focused on combat. But Spyro is like the only 3D platformer I've really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Every other platformer I've enjoyed has been 2D.
Yeah, weirdly enough, you and I both skipped like Mario 64, which would probably be like the main 3D platformer people. Yeah. Like last week I was comparing it to it, and yet I've never really played it. I played Mario games, but I never played the 3D one.
Yeah.
I jumped in at Sunshine,
yeah,
which you did too.
Which a lot of people didn't like, but I thought was fine.
Yeah. I mean, it might be one of those things, just like Spyro, where when you're a kid, any game that you get is great. It's like, wow, can you see this new stuff?
Yeah.
Plus, like when you're 11, you can say, Mom, it's a game about cleaning.
Yeah, exactly.
It was, and she'll buy it for you.
It was so good. Anyway, so back to Spyro. So yeah, I've completely done the first game, and it was a lot of fun, and it was very entertaining. The final boss was weird.
Narc or whatever?
Nasty
Narc. Yeah.
Or Ganasty Ganork, which is how it's spelled, but it's pronounced Nasty Narc.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a lot of... Like, the whole game was really fun, but the ending was kind of strange. Because you get to the last level, and you have to do... Like, you get to his world,
yeah,
and you have to do two other levels before you fight him, and I'm like, okay, fine. And then you go up against him, and it's like a very strange non-boss fight. Like, it continues to be... It sort of continues the tradition of the bosses not really having health bars.
Mm.
Or enemies not really having health bars. Because basically, you have to chase some enemies around the arena to get keys to unlock the ability to actually go after Narc. And when you do, you flame him once, he runs away, you catch him, you flame him again, and the fight is basically over.
Wow.
Barring one more platforming section.
Hmm.
So it was really weird, kind of a lackluster boss fight, and I guess that's why I didn't remember it from being a kid.
Yeah, I remember Ripto and the Queen both pretty well.
Yeah. The other two, like, so that was interesting. That was kind of a letdown, but I really, really enjoyed the first game, which I didn't think I was going to do, which is great. And paradoxically, now that I'm about halfway into the second game, I'm enjoying it less.
Hmm.
Like, Ripto's still hilarious. I love all the whole character cast is great. The font Sheena, I think her name is, she's great. Hunter's great. The voice actor is definitely different.
Okay.
I could tell that, but I actually quite... Like, the quality of the animation is really different now, so when Hunter's baring his teeth to describe how scary dragons are, mm-hmm, he actually has teeth to bear,
yeah,
as opposed to last time, where he was just showing gums at the camera.
Yeah.
So that was nice. Yeah, so there's a good nostalgia here, but, like, some wrinkles are definitely showing, because
mm-hmm,
I have basically been... Now, one of the things that Spyro 2 did that Spyro 1 didn't do... Spyro 1, you didn't really get better... As the game went on, you were as capable of fighting Nasty Narc on day one as you were at the end.
Yeah.
So I 100%ed levels as I went through them. I didn't leave a level until I was done. There were only a couple rare occasions where I had to double back to get an achievement.
Mm-hmm.
In Spyro 2, that's no longer possible. There are some areas that are gated off by skills you don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. Like, I'm like, okay, fine, I'll do as much as I can, and I'll come back later when I can do
that. That's the hover glide and the ground pound headbutt.
Yeah, the ground pound headbutt, and the other big one is diving.
Diving,
yeah, climbing, and the ground pound. So you don't have those at certain points. But you do get introduced to money bags, and oh my god, I love money bags.
And money bags is also a different voice actor?
Yeah, I think, I don't
okay,
think
so probably all
guy.
The voice actors are different. That's a shame.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
If it's not the same person doing Ripto, though, it's a pretty good impersonation.
Oh, that's good.
Like, I heard the voice and I went, yep, that's Ripto.
I wonder if they could actually get any of the people back.
Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting thing we probably should have looked into.
Yeah, we probably could.
But, yeah. But, some of the warts are showing now, though. Because you have to, like, when you go back into... when you go back into a world in the first Spyro, all the enemies have respawned, and that's sort of, you know, de rigueur, right? That's normal.
Yeah.
When you do it in Spyro 2, though, not only have all the enemies respawned, but the level has sort of reset. So, like, even though you've already done everything and unlocked everything and received all the challenges, everybody in the world, all the NPCs, still react as if it's your first time there.
Hmm.
So you get all the speeches again. And, like, they want you to do all the challenges again.
Oh,
they even give
that.
You the talisman,
yeah,
again. And when I was just like, I just want to run through this level to do the thing I forgot to do earlier at the end, that's kind of annoying. So I found that really kind of irritating. And I remembered it that I'd found it irritating last time, too, when I started playing it. So that's not so great. The worlds do have a lot of character, though. Like, the enemy design is good and varied. And it's consistent and simple, just like it was when we were kids, whereas, you know... If they're wearing metal, you have to charge them. If they're bigger than you, you have to flame them.
Yeah.
If they're bigger than you and wearing metal, you've got to find an alternative way of killing them. Like, the design is simple and very effective, and it's still a very good game. I just, that is an irritation that has been bugging me.
Hmm.
One of the things I did like about this was that the racing challenges, the speedways, now have an extra point to them. So not only is there the challenge itself of completing the race, but also all of them have a hidden extra thing to do buried in them somewhere. So I thought that was a neat and a good chance to just, you know, get a little bit more out of the racing maps than just a straight challenge. So I'm having a great time is the short of it. I have one major complaint, but I'm definitely going to go back as soon as I can. And I can't wait to get to three.
The only person, I'm trying to figure this out here, the only, no one's written down online that I could define from a 30-second Google whether or not the voice actors return, except for Tom Kenny. Well, I didn't even know. It's ironic because we were going to talk about SpongeBob today on TV Talkers. But Tom Kenny, the voice of SpongeBob, is also the voice of Spyro.
Oh, there you go.
I didn't even know. Apparently he was the voice of Spyro in the second two games originally, and this time they brought him back for all three. So there you go. There's a little bit of voice acting knowledge for
Spyro
you.
Spyro is back.
Yeah, and he's great.
Yeah,
that's a great version of Spyro. I'm also looking at the Spyro wiki, and I can see the Spyro from the games versus the Spyro from Skylanders, and it still terrifies me.
I know.
It's like a pug, which is not good. Okay, so it's good to know that Spyro is still as we remembered it. I'm pleased to hear that. Speaking of things that I don't really have a segue into this, but man, the internet is mad at Fallout 76 and Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yep.
Mostly Fallout 76, though. So we'll start with Red Dead Redemption 2 because, or I guess it's not technically Red Dead Redemption 2, it's Red Dead Online, because just like GTA wasn't GTA 5 online, it was GTA Online, this one's just Red Dead
Online.
The problem most people seem to have, I mean, I joked last week about how I didn't really want to play GTA Online after it got to a point because it was just a guy with a plane, like literally who had enough money.
You
had enough money to crash a plane at me, or just someone came up and shot me in the back while I was getting the money out of an ATM or whatever. And it sounds like, unfortunately, that's the same thing. You don't have a plane, but basically you'll kind of be doing your own thing. Like a crew will like ride in, they'll shoot you, and they'll just ride out.
Yeah.
So it's like, meh. This is pretty much what you have to expect from these type of games. It's going to be gangs of people, and I'm not going to say gangs of 12-year-olds because I don't know how old they are, but that is very childish behavior, just roaming around and just ruin people's day.
Yeah.
I'll just go ahead and say that. I've played enough online games to know that those people usually have high-pitched voices and usually are getting sandwiches brought in from their mom from the next room, hopefully PB&J with the crust cut off. But, yeah, it sounds like that was going on. But that's not what people are angry about GTA Online or Red Dead Online. People are mad because it's got apparently a broken economy. So, I haven't played it because I haven't even finished Red Dead Redemption 2. There's so many things to play. I've been bouncing back and forth between that. I'm trying to finish off the side missions in the Spider-Man DLC. I am still going through a run-through of Dark Souls. And we got Pokemon Let's Go, which, we have to do updates on this week, too. In addition to other things. So, haven't had time to turn to Red Dead Online. Yeah, my goal for today is to not say GTA when I mean Red Dead. But it sounds like everything is just insanely expensive. So I'm looking at a picture here where a semi-auto shotgun is $900, and apparently doing a mission you get anywhere from $2 to $5.
Wow.
Yeah, and there's also gold bars, which when you do a mission you get like a good, here's a quote from an article here. A good mission will give you about a $4 to $5 payout and maybe 1 to 2% of a gold bar. So it sounds like they had the right idea, but the tuning for how much things are is just way off.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously the thought is that eventually they're going to, I don't know if they release right now, but obviously eventually they're going to have these gold bars probably for sale for real money.
Yes,
I'm sure. But right now, people are kind of having a meltdown because it sounds like this is just insane. Like, people are talking about they have to grind for like 20, 30 hours to buy a new gun. And that's crazy. Who has that kind of time?
Koreans.
I envy you. That's true.
If you can play StarCraft, you can do this.
That's true. The professional gamers in Korea probably have I'm sure there's people out there who have that kind of time. I envy them. If they have that kind of time, I don't. But yeah, that's the main problem people are having with that. But that is nothing compared to the meltdown that is happening over at Bethesda right now.
Oh, boy.
So I encourage people, again, we wisely, it seems, did not spend our actual real hard-earned money. And shockingly, we don't get games given to us for free here. So if we play something, it's because we went out and purchased it with our money that we earned. And so neither of us bought Fallout 76, which appears to have been a stroke of genius on our part, because, man, this game is getting torn apart. I encourage people, if you're listening to it and you want to see it firsthand, go watch videos. Just the other, I've watched a few videos. I was watching one from Angry Joe. I'm sure you've heard of him. I'm sure the people out there have heard of him. Angry Joe's reviews, where he reviews games that he likes, aren't that good because he's not angry. But he's called Angry Joe for a reason. And this one, I feel like he knocked out of the park, because he'll just line up quotes from Todd Howard at E3 with actual visualizations from the game. And it's unbelievable how much they seem to have screwed this up on just
every conceivable level.
I've seen some of the worst glitches I've ever seen. And people, like, it's a joke how buggy Bethesda's games are.
Yeah.
They usually come out very glitchy. But this seems to be on another level. He spliced in a video. It wasn't his video, but it was from another guy who was playing the game and actually noticed the game destabilizing around him. He felt like he was in the Matrix and it was crashing. I've seen people where they have that, like, weird scarecrow people that are, like, coming at them because they have the polygon, but they don't have any animations that are coming at them and getting attacked by this thing. I've seen people fall through the floor. I've seen people get stuck in rocks. I've seen every possible thing you can say. And then again, if you go back to what they said at E3, they promised the world was going to be huge. It's going to be populated. It was going to have 16 times. They worked on brand new lighting and landscape graphics.
Yeah.
And yet there are people out there who have sunbeams coming from a pile of dirt. It's hilarious. And yet, of course, they promised 16 times the graphical capacity in this game. It's embarrassing. And of course, because it's online, they even, in a what I thought was probably the best cut that I've seen in a YouTube video, certainly in a while, he cut Todd Howard saying, "You won't even see a server," right next to the game crashing with an error message saying the server has failed. It was so good.
Oh my goodness.
But man, did they screw this game up. And one of the things that's, if you've heard, like, I don't know if it's called Baggate, but it probably should. Have you heard of this bag thing?
No.
So, again.
Oh, hang on. No, yes, I have.
We didn't play it.
Yeah, yeah.
In the collector's edition of Fallout, it's apparently people were promised a nylon, or not necessarily a nylon, but a cloth bag.
Yeah.
Like a collector's bag, and you were paying for that. That's probably why you were paying for this, because you wanted this nice bag. And then what people ended up getting was like a cheap plastic piece of crap.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on the actual materials, but the point is they were
nylon
promised
was the bad material.
Nylon was the bad material. So they were promised one thing and they were given another thing.
Yeah.
And so not only did Bethesda say, yeah, we knew about it, but we couldn't make the bag for that price with the materials that we promised.
Yeah.
They said they're not doing anything about it, including changing the order, like the description of the order online on their pages. And so fans have filed a class action lawsuit against Bethesda. This is one of the biggest collapses I've seen in the last 2 weeks, basically since Blizzard did exactly this. But that's astonishing. And they have every right to. I think if you paid for something expecting one product and you get another one, and the fact that they haven't apologized, they haven't said we'll ship them to you eventually, they haven't changed it online.
No.
They haven't done anything.
It's like this is exactly what they always intended to do.
This is straight up
lying.
This is straight up wrong. So, as a Bethesda fan, before now, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, I guess I'm just going to have to shove them into the EA bucket now.
You know what I was thinking? I was thinking between Bethesda this week, or this past couple weeks, and Blizzard last month, there aren't many game companies left that we can, like, there aren't many good guys left. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Blizzard was, I think, in a lot of people's good books before this. Yeah. People love World of Warcraft. People love Diablo. People love Overwatch.
Yeah.
And those were games that historically, I don't think, screwed. Like, Overwatch has microtransactions, but it doesn't get a lot of flack for it because it's purely cosmetic. So it's just like, if you want to look this way, go for it. Live your truth, whatever.
Yeah.
But you bought the game, if you got it on console, I think it was full price. If you got it on PC, it was, I think, either 60 or 40, or like it was significantly cheaper. And then all characters and maps are free. Just, you got the game, it's a season pass for forever with this game. They had a lot of goodwill. They blew it in spectacular fashion. Bethesda had a lot of goodwill coming to this. They crushed E3. I think we said they almost won E3, if we didn't think that. Because Todd Howard had the funniest E3 press conference, at the very
least. That's true, yeah.
And here they are absolutely crapping the bed. And you can find prices on this, but they are dropping the price of Fallout 76 cataclysmically. Like, I saw a post online, I don't know if it was Canadian or U.S. dollars, but it's a new game that was on sale for $35.
Wow.
Can you imagine a brand new game from any other company that they drop down to $35? I can't.
No, this is... And I think part of what we're seeing is... It's interesting because I think what we are witnessing is the game industry actually run up against the limits of what the public will stand for.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is I don't really blame them for having taken this long, because generally speaking, as companies can do like crappy things and people will whine, but eventually everyone shuts up and gets on with it.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a point, and more than any other industry, the video game industry has taken advantage of that.
Yeah, you can't have microtransactions in movies.
Yeah. But there is a point at which eventually enough people will say no more. And I think we might have actually hit it.
I feel like you're right there at the... Like, I just watched Young Frankenstein this past week.
Yeah.
Fantastic movie. And I feel like you're the guy in the church who's going, finally, time for a riot.
Yeah.
A riot is a terrible thing.
Yeah.
But it's about time we had one. I think that's you.
Yes.
Because, like, this is the thing you've been preaching for a while. I kind of agree. It's shocking, but it's also shocking, I think, that it's coming from two of the most beloved companies that we've had. Like, there were reports a few months ago of Rockstar working people, like...
To death
over Red Dead Redemption 2. But as horrible as that is, we've heard that about Rockstar before. I don't think it surprised people. Certainly when you play Red Dead Redemption 2, you're like, yeah, this is going to sound terrible, but this is the kind of thing that could only be achieved by working people to the bone like that. It's horrible, but that's the fact of it. And, like, I hope those people... or either extremely well compensated for what they're doing or can, you know, take it out legally. I hope they're being treated properly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or doing it voluntarily. Who knows? I'm not going to go down that road. But we've heard stuff about Rockstar that surprised no one. Bethesda was a beloved company. So was Blizzard. We expect this out of EA. Right? We expect this out of, unfortunately, Ubisoft. We expect this out of BioWare. We expect this out of a lot of companies. We're running out of really good companies. Like, we've even heard that CD Projekt Red apparently works people super hard, almost on Rockstar levels. And I love CD Projekt Red. So then now there's literally not a single gaming company on planet Earth that I can point to and be like, they keep nailing it. Because I love Nintendo, but even Nintendo has that whole YouTube thing.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have a lot of microtransactions, but even Nintendo seems to have not gotten the idea that streamers are good for sales.
Yeah, it does seem to be that every video game company is either screwing over their workers, their customers, or both.
Yeah. It's true.
And it's really just a question of which camp they're in.
That's succinct and sad.
Yes. But you're right. Like, and the problem is, the only companies I can think of who I don't apply that label to, I also feel like I don't necessarily know enough about.
Yeah.
Like Insomniac Games. I have a lot of respect for them, but if I dug on them, I'd probably find a horror story.
That's true. They seem to be doing okay. And it's mostly because they're independent.
Yeah.
And so they work with Sony, but they're not owned by Sony. And I guess Santa Monica, if you're going together, the God of War developers, they seem to be doing pretty okay too. But man, it seems like the bigger the studio gets, the more corrupt and stupid.
Well, we can talk about Konami for days if we wanted to go down that route.
Yeah, I mean, Konami's been a black mark in the game industry for years and years and years, especially with the way they treated Hideo Kojima, who we'll probably see next week because he's BFFs with Jeff Keighley. And if you see it a few months ago, Jeff Keighley tweeted out a new haircut by Hideo Kojima. Someone replied, I wish someone would treat me the way Jeff Keighley treats Hideo Kojima.
I did not see that,
It's beautiful.
That's amazing.
It is truly beautiful. But you did bring it up that I think the God of War developers and the Spider-Man developers are two of the few companies that we can kind of point to. And you know what? That's, I think, why it's so important. We can talk about the games of the year. Like, we could talk about... Monster Hunter World was maybe made by Capcom, but particularly with this year, if you are the type of person like you are, Adam, and you want to vote with your wallet, like to me, I don't like it, and I try not to support games that I don't like. But if I want the game, I'm going to buy the game, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
I'll try to do things like I did with NHL, which is I'll buy it used so I don't give EA money. You know, I'll try to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
But if I want, I'm going to play it. I think a lot of people are in that camp. But I bet there's a growing number of people who are like you, which is I only have one vote. That's with my dollar, and I'm only going to spend my dollar on stuff that I appreciate.
Yeah.
And if you're in that boat, this is one of the best years possible for you because of Spider-Man and
God of War.
God of War. And you need to go out there and buy a PS4 right now because, I mean, we'll have to give credit to Sony way back when. Like at the turn, what was it, like 2013 when the new console generation started?
It's been, yeah. I think it was,
and that was when Xbox One had that meltdown where they said, where they, you know, the Xbox One had to be always online.
Yeah.
And then they said, you know, you won't be able to loan games to people anymore. And then Sony released those amazing troll commercials.
Yeah, that's right.
Where it was like, here's how to share a Sony game. And it just had one guy handing it to another guy. Thanks. That's how to share a Sony game.
Yeah.
So I think that Sony needs to get a lot of credit. They've practiced what they've preached. I mean, it's not on here because it's not this year, but Horizon Zero Dawn is another big Sony exclusive. And Matt adores that game.
Yeah.
Horizon Zero Dawn, to my knowledge, I've only played a bit of it. I haven't played all of it. Horizon Zero Dawn, Spider-Man, God of War. First-person games, not online, no microtransactions. Solid stories, and all three of them got absolutely rave reviews.
Yeah, Sony's having a heck of a year.
Yeah, so if you're looking for the political games to buy, to stick it to the man, I think we need to... Like, I hope God of War runs the table. It more than Spider-Man, I think, it has the chance.
Yeah.
I hope God of War runs the table because of what it would say to the industry.
Yeah, it's just enough.
Enough is enough, yeah. Like, Assassin's Creed Odyssey is a good game. It's got microtransactions. It's got that thing that we debated earlier where it has, like, the easy mode, basically.
Thing, yeah,
the anti-grind thing. That's horrible. I got it because I need it, but that's horrible.
Yeah.
So, speaking of the Game Awards, we're going to talk about that and our Pokemon Let's Go experiences in just a little bit, but we do have to pay some bills, so we're going to play a couple commercials for you. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Actually, we'll be back in two. It won't be 2 minutes, but I'm just going to use the expression. Hello and welcome back. You are still listening to a 1 hour special episode of Game Over. Excuse me, I am still your slightly sick host, Simon Pazdor, joined by my faithful squad mate, Adam Pazdor. The TV Talkers crew will be back next week. I know that there's been a few shows that they've been itching to talk about, plus some unfortunate and sad TV news that I won't delve into this because I don't want to cross the streams, so to speak. but yes, they will be returning next week. This is a very temporary thing. They just needed to, we just were so bursting with video game news that we wanted to just hijack the show and take over the whole thing. So here we are, just the two of us.
Yeah.
But, we do have plenty to talk about, including we've had more Pokemon Adventures. So you've had we share a Switch because you have yet to buy your own.
Yeah.
But how far have you gotten in Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu?
I have four badges.
Four badges.
I've done a bit more of the story besides that, so I've done, like, I'm basically in the process of getting badge 5.
Yeah.
But I decided to do a little running around first because I realized very early on, and this is just a bid for the Pokemon people, my team was extraordinarily weak to electricity. So I actually made a detour. I ran down into Fuchsia to get the equivalent of Surf. They're all skills now.
Yeah, yeah.
So I ran down into Fuchsia to get Surf, and then I went up into the power plant, and now I have a Magneton, and my team is no longer. But actually, while I was in the power plant, I decided to confront Zapdos.
Oh.
And bear in mind, my team are low 40s at the moment. Zapdos is level 50, and I believe it gets all of its stats boosted when you fight it.
Mm.
And I did not have the Magneton when I fought it. That's why I was there, to catch the thing. And it ran the table.
Jeez.
It My team was extraordinarily Zapdos weak.
So, for those of us who don't know, including myself, how do legendary Pokemon battles work? Do you have to defeat it?
That's a good question. I'm glad you asked. So, you actually get a bit of tutorial on this when you get the Pokeflute from Mr. Fiji, because it works the same way on Snorlax. So, with the Pokeflute, you walk up, and you, just like in the old games, you play it, and Snorlax wakes up. And traditionally, in the old games, of course, he would attack you, and you could get to try to catch him. Now, the way that works now, and the way that works with legendaries as well, is the same deal, with one little catch. So, how it happens is, if you encounter a Pokemon like that, a special one in the world, they attack you, and you have to fight them first. And then, you knock them out. You don't try and catch them traditional way.
Okay, straight up brawl.
Yeah, you knock them out, and then you get to go to the catching screen, for lack of a better term.
Right.
And then you can try and catch them. And if they run away, then they're gone.
Forever.
As far as I know. I've encountered both Snorlaxes. I caught one, and the other one just buggered off.
Poof.
However, and I believe that both of those things are on a timer.
Yeah, I thought that you had 5 minutes to fight.
You get a 5-minute fight timer, and I bet there's a set time before they run away, too.
Hmm.
But you don't get to see that one. Zapdos just sent me home packing. So I was like, okay, I'll come back a little later.
You know what? Weirdly enough, I like that, too. Because it's always such a pain with the legendaries, because you're busy trying to actually, have a fight, but also trying to catch them.
Yeah.
And that never quite sat right with me. And then we've all had experiences, particularly in Pokemon Colosseum and XD Gale of Darkness, where the thing that you're fighting has a recovery move, or it's got a recoil damage move.
Yeah.
And there's just a whole bunch of reasons why the catching mechanic should be different from
the
battling mechanic. And I haven't missed it one bit. There were times when I caught myself, I went into Rock Tunnel, and I switched I had a Pikachu, and it was my leading Pokemon.
Yeah.
I switched it out to Squirtle, or I guess Wartortle over time.
Before I realized
that doesn't matter. Still, most people in there, use rock and fighting types and stuff like that, so it wasn't a bad idea not to have Pikachu, but that was kind of funny that I caught myself off guard doing that. I also ran to exactly one Kangaskhan so far.
I have yet to see one.
Here's the funny part about it, though. It happened when I entered Rock Tunnel. I literally could not have avoided the thing. It was one of the Pokemon that spawned into me.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's it's calm, so the nature's garbage.
Yeah.
Do you know if there's breeding in this game, or is there just the...
Not as far as I've seen. If my computer would uncrash, I would Google it for you.
Ah, the computer science professor has his computer crashing.
Yeah.
Interesting. Funny how things work.
It happens a lot.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if you can actually breed the thing. Not that I particularly care about being competitively viable.
Yeah. No, if there's one thing I've learned from watching people talk about it, it's that the Let's Go competitive scene is garbage.
That's what I believe, yeah. I mean, you don't have any items. You don't have any abilities.
You have nature, sorry. Yeah, you don't have abilities.
Yeah.
And there's only 170 to choose from.
Yeah, because 171.
Counting Alolan forms.
Yeah, so it's a different scene.
Yeah.
It won't surprise me if it doesn't take off, but I do like that. I've gotten a little bit further. I think I've gotten through Rock Tunnel, so I'm out of Viridian, or maybe I just stopped at the end of Rock Tunnel and take the other side.
Are you talking about to go to Cerulean?
No,
that's Mount Moon.
I'm talking about Rock Tunnel.
Okay, you're talking about Rock Tunnel.
Yeah, no, I have it right. Because you go through Rock Tunnel, and your rival takes you to a place that you can cut down, and then you go do a little thing, and then...
Oh, yeah.
You pop up there. So I think I'm stuck in whatever cave that is. I was watching a video online, and someone pointed out there aren't that many caves in real life, and yet this game seems to love caves. You're always shoved in caves. How often on the way you're going do you pass through a cave?
Virtually never.
Not too often. I don't know if the Kanto region of Japan is just rife with caves. But yeah, there seem to be an awful lot of them here, which is pretty funny. So here's a question for you. What mechanics from this game now? Because I think we've agreed this is a fun experiment.
Yes.
Sort of the same way that I thought that more or less about XD Gale of Darkness and Pokemon Colosseum. Pokemon Colosseum, by the way, the most cruel naming convention in the world. It's a sequel to Pokemon Stadium. No. That's the only reason it was called Colosseum. There was no other good reason for it to be called Colosseum. But which of the new mechanics do you want in the new game, and what do you want done with them? Because as far as I can tell, I'm not as far as you.
Yeah.
But the secret techniques, I thought it was weird that in most cases people learn them.
Yeah.
And then in your case, Eevee learns it. I don't know why. Why is this Eevee special? Like, I know they want to make sure your starter Pokemon feel even more special than it is.
Yeah.
But if you could do it, why don't you just both learn it?
Yeah.
I don't really understand that. I also don't understand just how it is supposed to work. How's a human supposed to light up a cave? Doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. I like, but one of the things I do like is I like the fall Pokemon. I think that's not going to be an uncontroversial opinion. And I do kind of like that instead of getting out. Do you get a bike?
Nope.
I don't think so. Yeah, you just ride. I got an Arcanine too. And by the way, as a follow up to last week when you talked to the person who asked if you like cats, I said I like dogs. So she still asked for a bunch of Meowth and then took them. Same thing that you had to do.
Yeah.
And then she, like, you got the option to be like, all right, I think she even says it herself. Are you curious why I said that? Oh, I'm just curious if you'd change your opinion.
Yeah.
Or something
that's
like
what
that.
She said to me too.
Yeah.
But she gave you an Arcanine?
She gave me an Arcanine.
That's weird. I was expecting you to get a Persian.
Well, it made more sense for me, right? Because she's just like, I thought maybe if you caught a whole bunch of cats, it might change your opinion.
Yeah. And that's what she said. That's exactly what she said to me.
Oh, interesting.
She thought, I guess I was reading it as she thought if I caught a whole bunch of Meowths, then I'd get sick of them.
That's fascinating how they've done that. The phrase works both ways.
Yeah.
Well, what are you writing, Pokemon?
Lazy, because it means you didn't do both sides, but good, well done.
But, so that's the secret techniques. I like the catching mechanics. Which of these would you like to see come back in Pokemon? We'll call it Pokemon Stars if we don't know a better name.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the idea of separating catching from battling. I think that's a good way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that the go mechanic is the way to do it.
Agreed.
Because also, like, part of it, one of the things I always liked about it was there were certain moves in the game that were just designed to make catching easier. Like, false swipe has no use in battle.
No.
Apart from helping you catch Pokemon. And also, you know, I've done the same thing you did. I put a party Pokemon out first that was good for the location I was in before going, oh, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird to me that that's the case. I almost want to do, I don't know what I want the catching mechanic to be, but I think the way they do Legendary should be the way they do everything. Fight it, knock it out, then you can catch it.
Mm.
And, let me try and catch it first, but give me the opportunity to make it easier. Because that's the thing, is early on in the game, when I could just throw a Pokeball haphazardly and get stuff, I was like, okay, this catching mechanic is fine. But now that I've gotten far enough in that things are breaking out of 10, 20, 30 Pokeballs, I'm going, okay, all I have at my disposal is a raspberry, and somebody told me...
That's so funny if you know the context.
I know. And somebody told me if you use a second berry, it overrides the first one. So it's not like I can keep plying this Snorlax with food so it will calm down. So I'm going at this point, there's nothing I can do. I can't hit it. I can't paralyze it. I can't weaken it in any way. I can just throw and hope.
Yeah.
And I'm going, when I get to Mewtwo... Hope ain't gonna be enough.
Yeah. R.I.P. headphone users after that little rant there. What you talked about, first of all, I think they need to switch up the actual catching minigame. I think I would like to see some nuance there. And not necessarily like you have the Pokemon Go spins or something like that, but switch it up somehow where, you know, I don't care what you do, but do something. You're the game designers, not me. What I would like is, you kind of reminded me of it, is I think maybe you get the option, like when you run into a Pokemon... Or do you want to battle or do you want to catch?
Yeah.
And if you battle, after you're done battling, you can catch it, like the same way you could do with Legendary Pokemon. But if you just want to throw the ball and catch it, you can. But also if you want to battle and knock it out to get EXP, you can.
Yeah.
Because I don't like... I know the phrase is catch them all, but it's not scorched earth. I don't like going through the game and catching every friggin' Weedle that I see to try and level up my Eevee. I just don't like that. And then people have made fun of it to death, so I won't go down that road more. But grinding them down into candy to give to Professor Oak is still weird.
Yeah. Well, now that they've sort of done that better this time, right? He's now just essentially paying you in candy.
Yeah, he's paying you in candy for this, but he's still giving you the candy that are oddly specific to the Pokemon you've given. But yeah, it was phrased better in this than it was in Pokemon Go.
Yeah. In Pokemon Go, they were definitely getting turned into candy.
Yeah, they're definitely getting turned into candy. Brutal. Oh, anyway, so yeah, I think we can agree on how we want that to be split up. What do you think about the secret techniques? I've been going on for ages, for years, that they need to be attached to Pokemon but not HMs. It's weird when the human does it. I think that more... I didn't like... The ride Pokemon were a cool idea.
Yeah.
But they didn't go far enough. That's just weird that a Pokemon popped out of nowhere and helped you. Yeah. Like, there's always a Machamp around to carry you. Weird.
That's, yeah, very strange.
And, like, I understand when you're going back several generations, the reason you had HMs is to restrict the area. Because you couldn't... It's just a standard thing. You unlock this, now you can get to this area. Like you were talking about with Spyro.
Yeah.
They're changing the way they do that now so you can have your own team. But I still think, like, I know you might want to have 9 Rattata as your party of 6 somehow. But if you're getting into the feeling of being a Pokemon master and you're traveling the world, yeah, you probably have 1, maybe 2 flyers. You probably have a Pokemon you can surf on. Like, you might not like the Pokemon of that region, but there's utility there. I think the more they take that away, the more it's just like you're wandering around through an overworld and your Pokemon have no connectivity to it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I like your party influencing the overworld, which is what HMs do.
Yes.
So I would still say it's more like, God, there's a game I can think of that I'm now blanking on it, where it's the character, whatever it is, it just has traits eventually. So it like levels up, and the more it levels up, it gets like... This character is, like, stronger, so now when it hits for, like, an extra 30% or whatever. Yeah. Or this character has developed, like, thick skin.
Yeah.
I'm blanking on the name of a game that does that.
Maybe. I can't think of one.
Okay, maybe it'll come back to me. But I would like that. So if you just have, like, a Rhydon in your party, you don't need to teach it strength. It's strong. And so it just has the ability to use strength.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I think if they want to gate stuff off... then I think a good organic way to do that is essentially just to add a quality to Pokemon that... And it's not like it's any different from saying this Pokemon can learn this HM. No. It's just this Pokemon has this skill. And it like that's not difficult to do because you just... You know, like you sit it on the... You can put it on the Pokemon's information. It's not hard. It's not a long list.
No.
You know, there's a maximum, 8... HMs.
And even if you want to switch them up somehow, like you could still do that, and a Pokemon could have like multiple things.
Yeah.
But that way you don't have like the, not a Zigzagoon. What was the Pokemon that? Bidoof.
Bidoof.
You don't know that way. You don't have an HM slave Bidoof.
Yeah.
That people just shove in their box to get through Victory Road.
Yeah. And I mean, it's less of an issue now if they wanted to go back to the old way of HMs because you now carry your box around with you.
Yeah.
So you can like swap in and out the HM person as necessary.
Well, what do you think about that? I don't like that.
I'm of two minds. On the one hand, like, as a person who's just trying to have a good time, it's fantastic. Because I don't have to run back to the box to get out the guy I want to raise. But as a person who understands, like, game balance, it's, and especially as someone, like, as a dungeon master for D&D, this is a terrible thing.
Yeah.
Resource management is an important part of games, and if you just are given all your resources all at once, then you're not like, I think the problem with Let's Go, the way that they're doing that is that they've sort of removed that major challenge of, I can only carry 6 with me, I need to be able to deal with everything that could come at me with just these 6.
Yeah, and I think, like, we talked about it particularly in Ultra Moon and Sun and Moon, that basically, when I play Pokemon games, I brute force it. Like, I pick 6 Pokemon that I like, and I just go through. And if I'm weak against the type, then I deal with it. Like, the thing that Ash does in the anime, or at least he did in the early anime, because I haven't watched it in how many years. But
he still does.
He still does? Perfect. So where he has to go up against Lieutenant Surge, where he goes out and he catches a Diglett or something, that kind of thing, that should be part of the game. Now, they encourage you to do it, especially in these ones, that when you show up to a gym, at least the early gyms, they're just like, you're going up against Brock, do you have a grass or a water type?
I really like that.
Yeah.
Haven't seen the rest of the gyms yet.
No.
So that changes. It's not super effective. It's different conditions now. Sorry, I interrupted you, but this is a great thing I love about this game.
Oh, good.
Is so every gym has a thing. Is if you don't meet this criteria, you can't come in.
Okay. So what are the criteria that you've seen so far?
So Brock's was, do you have a thing that's super effective?
Yeah.
Have you seen Misty yet?
I have seen Misty and Lieutenant Surge, but now
I'm trying to remember what they were.
I think Lieutenant Surge was just the chop thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The HM thing. I don't know if there's a separate one once you got inside.
Once you get inside, you know, there's always one when you get inside. I'm just trying to remember ones because the ones I just did. Because I've been into Saffron's gym. I didn't actually fight anyone in there because they actually kicked me out. It was the first one I hadn't met right away.
Hmm.
In Saffron, you have to have a Pokemon at level 45, which I do now, but didn't then. In Celadon, for Erica's gym, you have to have a cute Pokemon.
Aww.
Fortunately, presumably you'll have Pikachu or Eevee in your party, who I presume qualify.
Probably. I'm trying to find him here while you try to figure it out.
In Fuchsia, because I just went in there, what did they require from me? I'm just blanking on the rest of them because it was all different. I thought it was really, really cool. Because I originally thought, just like you, when I went into Brock's gym, it was like, oh, you need to demonstrate you have a Pokemon that can handle this gym.
I got it.
You got it? Okay, you go then.
Pewter is water, grass. Cerulean is level 15.
Right.
Vermilion, I was right, is beat the SSN, which means you have to do to get the chop-off thing.
Chop down,
that's the one. Celadon is only if you have a cute Pokemon. Fuchsia is you have to have 50 different species. Saffron is level 45. Cinnabar is, the last two are very basic, actually. Cinnabar is a secret key to get into the Pokemon Mansion, which we knew.
Yeah.
And Viridian is out of all other badges.
Oh. Okay, so.
So it does kind of drop off the unique requirements relatively early.
But I really liked that idea. I think it's a good thing to say, you know, it's not just can you walk in here and beat this gym, is how are you progressing as a Pokemon trainer?
Yeah. Well, I definitely like that, but now I forget where I was before that, but it's okay, because it's mostly just, I think these things should be, I don't want to say like a hardcore RPG, but I think it shouldn't feel like you're taking your team of friends and just going to blaze through, like bulldoze your way through it. It should feel more like an adventure. You should have to prepare for what you're going up against. If we think of something, I'm going to make an impossible comparison and compare Pokemon to Dark Souls.
Okay.
But part of the interesting thing about Dark Souls is when you go into a new area, you need to outfit yourself for what you're going to deal with there. Are you going into a poison swamp? Should you have more poison resistant stuff? Are you going to a fire area? Should you wear more fire resistant armor? It's not going to be necessarily the same in Pokemon, but I think that your team should be more fluid than it currently is. And if you're going in a water area, you shouldn't just be able to hop on a random Lapras that's around. You should have Pokemon that can fight in the water. And that's why in my ideal Pokemon game, there are specific types of battles that can only be fought with a specific... Like, I'm sorry, you can't just have your Pikachu float on top of a raft in the water and fight a Gyarados. It's going to get smoked, right? If you're fighting in the water and you don't have a water Pokemon, you should be in trouble. The same way Ash was in the original anime against Misty, if you recall.
That's true.
I think they hit under the water.
The environment was a much bigger deal in the anime, and it's never been a thing in...
Yeah, so I don't necessarily know if that needs to be a bigger deal in, like, every fight. I don't know if they need to, like, full-on Yu-Gi-Oh! And, like, bugs can fight in the forest better, who knows. But I would like to see something like that. And I would like to see your Pokemon have skills attached to them for the
HMs. Actually, you kind of bring up a thing that I really like as a mechanic in Pokemon is, like, one of the things that they do is you... There's been moves that manipulate the weather, right? There's sun and rain and hail. And the only one of them that really affects stats is sand, which boosts the special defense of rock types by a stage. And here's the thing. They never say that.
Yeah, no.
Like, if you don't know that, and I'm like, why is that not just a thing?
Yeah.
Like,
why doesn't, like, rain lower the accuracy of something or something?
Yeah, something like that. It's like when heavy rain comes down, everybody's accuracy goes down a stage, maybe unless you're a water type. Like, I wish the weather did more.
Maybe you're slower in the sun?
Yeah.
Because it's hot and you're just, like,
and you're lethargic.
Actually, slower in the blizzard would be better.
Yeah. It slows everyone down. I wish there were more things that did, like, that just messed with stat boosts in a way that wasn't just, here's just a move that raises my attack by two stages.
Yeah.
And especially in, like, maybe not in competitive, like, okay, fine. That has to be a more controlled environment, but in the world, like when you fight, for example, when you fight Snorlax at the start of the fight, his attack or defense just goes up by a level.
He's like a totem Pokemon.
Yeah. And it's the same thing with Zapdos. All of its stats went up, which is part of the reason that it whooped me from here to Sunday.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I would just like to see more of that. So if you're on the water, and, like, maybe if you don't have a water Pokemon, then it would be nice to see if there was a mechanic way to just say, you're not equipped for this, I'm going to punish you now.
I agree. I feel like they dip their toes in that with the terrain moves from the previous games, who for the life of me, like, I mostly have them down, but every time I'm playing Smogon and I see someone use terrain, I always hop on.
Just to remember what it does?
Just to remember exactly what all the effects are, because they have different ones. But I agree that is something they should look into.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to keep playing Let's Go, and we could probably talk about it for years and years and years because we're Pokemon fanatics. We're going to move on to the Game Awards because they are tomorrow. So,
you know how much of a Pokemon fanatic I am? The fourth assignment I gave to my students was about Pokemon.
Attaboy. I hope they all got A-pluses or something. So,
well, they haven't finished it yet, so we'll see.
Let's go through this, and I think we briefly went through it last time. But maybe let's start from the bottom this time, the bottom of this list, although I'm not sure how many of these we can actually vote on, because a lot of them aren't esports. Unfortunately, we just don't follow that much esports because we're just not enough time. Not enough hours in the day. Can we petition to have a 30-hour day? Does Mars have a 30-hour day? Because I'm good to go to Mars. Like, I could really go with a 30-hour day. Maybe even 35. I could use way more time. Okay, so we're going to jump past
sports.
Yes, we're going to jump past content creator and indie game and esports. Best multiplayer game, Call of Duty, Black Ops 4, Destiny 2, Fortnite, Monster Hunter World, Sea of Thieves. The only things that I could possibly see winning this are Fortnite and Monster Hunter World.
Yeah.
And I think you have to bow down to Fortnite in this one particular category.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I was really hoping Sea of Thieves would just rock the world, because when I heard about it, I was like, oh, that sounds really cool. And then it came out, and I went, okay, never mind, I give up.
Yeah, it was a plop, not a cannonball, unfortunately. Although Ubisoft is releasing a vaguely piratey type game that I'm kind of interested in, but we'll see. Doesn't have any boarding, which I like. I like to be able to board. Yeah. You know, it's fun. Anyway, best sports/racing game. FIFA 19, Forza Horizon 4, Mario Tennis Aces, NBA 2K19, Pro Evolution Soccer 2K19, or 2019. I've heard so many good things about Forza Horizon 4. So I wouldn't be surprised if that one wins, especially because we did that little thing in this past summer where we dipped our toes into the waters of numerous other sports games.
Yeah.
And nobody seems to be happy.
No.
So I wouldn't be surprised if Forza Horizon takes that. Plus, it has the advantage of not being yearly.
Yes.
Which is something.
I'm happy that Mario is even on the board.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that they let a non-realistic, for lack of a better term, sports game in the field is, I think that's a really encouraging sign.
Agreed.
Because you don't necessarily need to be a perfect simulation to be a good game. Like, for example, that curling thing from Mario and Sonic. Still the best curling simulation I've ever played.
Best curling simulation you could find. Best strategy game.
Oh, boy.
So, weirdly enough, you and I are both huge strategy fans. I haven't played... I own one. Another one is on my wish list, but I haven't actually played any of these. Excuse me. Battletech by Harebrained Schemes. That's a fun name. Frostpunk.
Never heard of that.
Into the Breach. That's by the same guys.
I've heard of that one.
FTL.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I saw that one. That looked, I watched somebody play that.
Yes. The Banner Saga 3, which I've seen a lot of on Steam, and Valkyria Chronicles 4, which I bought. I'm probably betting on Valkyria Chronicles because I've heard remarkable things. I adore the first Valkyria Chronicles. I bought 4 purely because people said it was similar to the first one. That's what I would bet for. But do you have a... what do people say about Into the Breach? I haven't heard it blow people away.
Yeah, I haven't heard a lot of things about it. I watched somebody play it for several hours, and it's... like, it looked good, but it was... I wouldn't have said it was going to win any awards. Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
But also, having said that, like, it was good in the same way FTL was good. And...
yeah.
Like, it's just... like, the developers are good at this thing that they're doing.
They know what they're doing. Yeah. Okay, best family game. Mario Tennis Aces, Nintendo Labo, Overcooked 2, Starlink Battle for Atlas, or Super Mario Party.
I want Nintendo Labo to win this.
I agree.
Just because I want to encourage Nintendo and everyone else to just keep doing weird stuff.
I've played, like, I messed around a little bit with Nintendo Labo at a cousin's house. Matt's played a fair amount of Mario Tennis Aces. He says it's really good. Haven't played Starlink. I know Matt also liked Overcooked 2. But weirdly enough, I know it's a bit biased because the only one I've played, I really dug Super Mario Party. I thought it was an excellent return to the series, and I wouldn't be surprised if it won. Kind of surprised the new Jackbox isn't in there, but we'll keep moving.
Too adult-oriented.
Yes, maybe. Best fighting game. Blaze Blue, Cross Tag Battle, Dragon Ball FighterZ, or FighterZ in Canada. Soul Calibur 6, Street Fighter 5, Arcade. Haven't played any of them, nope. So we're going purely off of that speculation. I'm going to bet either Dragon Ball or Soul Calibur with the slightest edge to Soul Calibur because it looks really cool.
Yeah, it does. I mean, the Dragon Ball ones, like, people seem to like those.
Yeah, they both have very in-depth character creators, and I am an absolute sucker for character creators.
And I think, like, Dragon Ball Z is probably one of the best franchises for a fighting game just because it's naturally so over the top.
Yeah.
Like, when you run into it with a superhero game, there comes a point where even they're going, yeah, Batman can't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
But, like, the Dragon Ball Z characters...
They can.
They could do whatever they want, and I'd be like, sure, why not?
They can indeed do whatever they want. Now, I think we're slowly catching up to where we stopped last week or 2 weeks
ago. Which is good, because we have 3 minutes.
Which is perfect, yes. So we won't be able to obviously get to the top, because we already gave our votes for Game of the Year. But Best Role-Playing Game basically reads like a list of my Steam wish list. Dragon Quest XI, Echoes of an Elusive Age is a fun name. Monster Hunter World... Ni No Kuni, those two games, Matt adores them, and I've heard a lot of love for both those two as well. Octopath Traveler, I really need to play that game. I've heard an incredible amount of good news about that game. And Pillars of Eternity 2, Deadfire, which I've seen a lot on Steam, and it's rather very positive or overwhelmingly positive reviews on Steam. I have no idea for that one. I'm going to bet Octopath Traveler because that one seems to have blown a lot of people away. But I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if it's Monster Hunter, Ni No Kuni, or Octopath Traveler. Any of those three wouldn't be a surprise for me.
I think it's probably going to be Monster Hunter.
Yeah. I mean, considering it broke so many records that he was talking about. Yeah. Best action adventure game, I feel like now we've caught up. Assassin's Creed, God of War, Marvel, Spider-Man, Red Dead Redemption 2, or Shadow of the Tomb Raider. If the words... Weirdly enough, if we're going to go pure action adventure, I'd probably give that one to Spider-Man, even though God of War is my game of the year.
I was thinking the same thing.
Best action game, Call of Duty, Dead Cells, Destiny 2, Far Cry 5, Mega Man 11. No idea on that one.
No, not a clue.
That one's wide open, as far as we know. I haven't heard any, and it's mostly just because I haven't heard any of those things wow us. Best independent game, Celeste, Dead Cells, Into the Breach, Return of Obra Dinn, and The Messenger. Only one of those is nominated for Game of the Year, so it's probably going to win its category, but then again, we just said that about Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Best performance from the we definitely covered these last week. Yeah, so I still think that's going to be Yuren Lowenthal from Spider-Man.
Yeah, it should be.
He absolutely crushed it. Best audio design. I think last week we talked about. I think this should be Red Dead Redemption 2 because just the details in that game are remarkable. And if you're talking about audio design, that's all about detail. Best score: Celeste, God of War, Spider-Man, Ni No Kuni, Octopath Traveler, Red Dead Redemption 2. This is tough.
Yeah.
It's either God of War or Spider-Man for me, I think.
Having not played the others, like, both God of War and Spider-Man had excellent soundtracks.
Yeah, they were really remarkable. The theme in Spider-Man, when everything is going perfectly in your web swing, and the theme of it is just absolutely fantastic. There are a couple more that we're going to skip, but once again, we're both expecting God of War to win Game of the Year. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Matt hasn't played it, but he might agree with it if he had. But... with that, we are just about all out of time. So, TV Talkers will be returning to its regularly scheduled programming next week. I hope you guys have a great week. Hope you play a lot of games. Hope you survive your exams. And we'll see you next week.